Welcome to the Thriving Birth Worker Podcast, a space for conversations about how you, the birth worker, can create not only a fulfilling and sustainable career, but a joyful and thriving life. I'm Erin Underwood, an educator, movement specialist, mother of four boys, and a total anatomy nerd. My passion is to see birth workers encouraged, supported, and empowered in their careers and life.
Hello, hello, friends. Today, I am really excited about today's episode. I get to talk to the incredible ladies from Pop Up. And I was excited when we scheduled this interview, especially to hear from two great minds who have collaborated to create a powerful movement. So if you haven't heard of them, Anne Marie Everett is a pelvic floor physical therapist who works primarily with perinatal clients. Haley Scheffner is a perinatal exercise specialist and a mom with POP herself. So Anne Marie and Haley share a passion for evidence-guided information, supportive resources, and community. Together, they formed POP Up, with the intention of changing the narrative on pelvic organ prolapse, also known as POP. To address their mission, Anne Marie and Haley collectively put their experience, knowledge, skills, passion, empathy, and humor into an online course that is aimed at giving you the tools to manage your POP and regain confidence. So you're going to want to hang out to especially the end of today's episode if you work with any of your clients who have pelvic organ prolapse, because we specifically touch on the concept of fear that rises up in professionals who work with pelvic organ prolapse clients. And you have possibly a fear of hurting them or of making it worse. And we specifically talk about how we as professionals can approach serving these clients with confidence. It's so good. So without further ado, here is our conversation. Hello, Haley and Anne Marie. How are you guys today?
Hi, great. We are well. Thank you so much for having us.
Awesome. So Haley, could you say hi first so we know whose voice you are?
Hello, hello.
And then Anne Marie.
Hi, I'm Anne Marie.
Perfect. Yes, that's just helpful because we don't get to see faces. So for those of my listeners who have never heard of you, can you guys share a little bit about your background and who you are and who you serve?
Yeah, so Haley again here, for anyone who didn't get it the first time. I am a perinatal exercise specialist, strength conditioning specialist, working primarily with people who are pregnant or postpartum or who have been one of those at some point. I've been in the movement industry for almost 15 years and didn't start working primarily with this population until I became pregnant with my son. And that kind of grew in organic interest just because I realized how little I knew and how little was in the curriculum for exercise professionals. Yeah, I think I hit on that pretty well.
Yeah. So I'm Anne Marie, and I am a doctor of physical therapy with a board certification in women's health, which should better more broadly be called pelvic health at this point. So my career has always been at least somewhat oriented towards the pelvic health space, because I was lucky enough to discover an interest in that when I was still in my graduate education. So I was able to kind of tailor my experiences to help me get to the experiences that I had after graduation. And I've worked almost exclusively with a perinatal population since I became a physical therapist. And I think that for me, it's been a matter of making sure that people have the best quality access to information that they can get around this time that I think even with the information we have, there are a lot of questions still to be answered and a lot of support that still needs to be given. So that's why I enjoy my work in the pelvic health world.
That's awesome. So can I ask how you two met or how you two started working together? I love stories of women entrepreneurs in it together.
Wouldn't it be fun if it was like a cool meet cute or something?
Yeah, it wasn't. I had some tailbone pain, and shortly after my birth of my son, I was working with people, like I mentioned, perinatal people, and I knew that it was a good idea to go and see a pelvic health professional. And so I saw a couple, and Anne Marie was one of those people. And then also more broadly, our actual relationship blossomed. when we became more colleagues, I was referring clients to her. She would refer patients to me. And so we kind of had to interact. It was forced. It was like an arranged marriage. And we became, we became friends from that.
That's awesome. So I love the, being able to refer out and not feeling threatened. Like, oh, I'm going to lose my client if I refer to someone, and that that knowing, like, I don't have to provide all the answers. I'm just going to be really good at what I do, and other people can be really good at what they do. So that's fabulous. So before we move into more what you guys do and who you teach, I was looking over your blog and over your bio, and one of the things you guys said that you're really passionate about was to change the narrative of POP, which is pelvic organ prolapse. And before we get into what you want to change the narrative to, what were you guys experiencing or hearing about pelvic organ prolapse? That what part of that narrative were you wanting to specifically kind of change?
Yeah, that kind of mission for me was born from my own experience in a diagnosis of POP. And when I would go and Google, you know, what do I do now that I have pelvic organ prolapse? I would come up with information that was very one-sided in the sense that it promoted a sense of doom and gloom. It kind of talked about POP literally as a worst-case scenario in the, like, postnatal fitness groups I was a part of, and in those communities like mom groups and all of that, it was kind of like, you might experience some incontinence, you might end up with diastasis recti. Worst case scenario would be that you end up with pelvic organ prolapse, which is when like everything is falling out. And so I was hearing all of these messages about it being like truly the worst thing that could allegedly happen to your body postpartum. And hearing all of the things that you could now not do, you know, weightlifting, running, carrying your children, jumping, things that I had really made a career of. And I didn't see anyone talking about moving forward with POP, moving alongside of POP, kind of having any kind of more dynamic relationship with their diagnosis other than finding it to be this really devastating, soul-crushing, life-ending thing. And I think that while it can be that, and it definitely was that in some sense for me, there's so much more to it. And so when I think about wanting to change the conversation, it's not so much that I want to change it to something else, but more that I want it to encompass all of the things that POP can be. Because this diagnosis is so different for everyone. It occurs on a spectrum. It's not just a singular thing. Everyone has a different relationship with their body, and that relationship changes over time. Everyone's coming into this diagnosis with a different belief about their body or the changes that occur in pregnancy and postpartum or through aging or anything like that. And a message that just simply says that this is a really terrible, miserable, debilitating thing that some people will unfortunately have to go through, it does not encompass what my experience came to be, which was one of a lot of growth and acceptance and curiosity and community and all of these really beautiful things that have occurred from a diagnosis of POP.
And I think from my perspective as a provider, when I hear the word narrative, I like immediately think of just how the words we're using and the story we're telling about what this diagnosis means and what it entails, whether there are things that you must do or cannot do. And I know that when I came out of school, like any good new grad, I thought that I knew a lot of things, and it turns out that I really truly knew very little. But I would come to people and say, you know, I have all these great tools for you. And in my head, it was like, I'm fixing this problem. Oh my gosh, this is so great. I know so many things. And I think that nobody prepared me for seeing the impact of those words on people. And it was not always positive. And I did not feel like ultimately what I was telling people was helping them in a lot of senses. And I think, you know, when I looked at the bigger picture, it was like, what kind of narrative and story does help people? Because it's not this. And I would see the impact of limiting words and limiting perspectives, even in my own life and in own parts of my own physical experience, people telling me what I could or couldn't do simply because of something that existed with none of my control. And as soon as we can change, you know, a limiting and dysfunction-based mindset and the way that we talk to people to a very like hopeful and growth-based mindset. That sort of thing, I think, can make providers more powerful and more effective too with their clients. And so for me, I want to change what providers are telling people as well, because I think that for better or for worse, that is what's creating a lot of these beliefs for people with POP.
Yes, absolutely. And I love how you're talking about, instead of just jumping to what do I do? Because I think, you know, whenever you're in the middle of a diagnosis, that's usually the first question is, what do I do? And really dialing it back to, and then even people who want to work with people who are with POP, of tell me what to do to help them, of really taking it back a step and saying, first, let's talk about how we're going to talk about this. Let's talk about our language and talk about how we address it, because it is, I think with POP especially, there's so much fear connected to the diagnosis and connected to everything about it, like how you're going to move and how you're going to live your life. And like you were saying, like it almost feels like a nail in the coffin, like the worst case scenario. And to even change the language around that is really powerful.
And I think if you start with the language, everything else makes sense, but you can't talk about it one way and take action in another way. So I think it has to be a cohesive conversation about like what our goals are and what we're trying to tell people to expect. And I think it's a total sea change from a very like dysfunction based and rule and limiting practices based approach to a lot of things.
For sure. So one of your blog posts is titled, "I wish someone would have told me." So can we get into that of you're talking to a client or you're putting yourself back in your shoes of being at the beginning of your diagnosis? How would you have wanted someone to sit down and what are like the key things you would have wanted someone to kind of coach you through?
Yeah, I try to avoid clickbaity headlines, but I did what I wish that I had written instead of what I wish someone had told me. Was more what I wish I could have learned, because I do want to take the opportunity to talk about, again, the language that we're using when we say that we feel like other people should have told us or should have kind of warned us. I think what I'd really love to see is an entire paradigm shift on how we acquire information about our bodies and what that process looks like. And right now, that process is often someone tells me what I have or what my problem is or what I'm now dealing with. And then I like might ask questions or maybe even not. And then we go from there. It's very infrequently a more kind of curiosity-based process. And as I now raise a very curious child, and I'm sure you can relate to this, Erin, you you start to see how that interest actually peaks really early. And from a very young age, my son has been interested in all things bodily function and kind of what, you know, what is this vibrator that you have? What is this pessary that you have? What is this tampon that you have? Kind of what do these things do? And how does my body function? How does his body function? How do our bodies differ? Right. So there are a lot of questions that just kind of like organically come up. And it's been really beautiful and exciting for me, who I was not raised with this kind of open mindset of asking questions and not having it be shame-based. It's been a really nice opportunity for me to kind of rewrite those conversations from a really early age. So right off the bat, I just want to say that I feel like the biggest shift that I'd like to see and the thing that I want to change most dramatically is the process at which we learn about our bodies. And so I don't necessarily think that there's ever a great opportunity to be told, you know, when maybe your framework of how the pelvic floor functions, or maybe you didn't even know that the pelvic floor existed, there's never a great time for someone to sit you down and say, well, hey, like, here's the pelvic floor. Here's what happens when it's not functioning as maybe ideally as it could, or when it's adapting this certain way, right? Like, that's never a welcome conversation. I don't think people will seek out that information. But I think that what we really need to see is this ongoing dialogue about the body and how it changes, how it functions, all of the different ways that it can adapt. And pelvic organ prolapse is one of those ways. And I think that that's kind of where I'd like to start. Realistically, that's probably a ways away. And I think that most people are probably first learning about POP when they are diagnosed with POP, or when maybe prenatally they're having a conversation. But I would say that's incredibly rare, even now that awareness is becoming more widespread. I'd say the vast majority of people I talk to are only becoming aware of POP when they themselves have been diagnosed with it. But even starting with those conversations, right? We have to start somewhere. I personally wanted someone to kind of walk me through, okay, well, why are these changes occurring? What do these changes reflect? But then what kind of could be the trajectory that follows? But more importantly, not so much how do we kind of fix it, but how is the body able to adapt to work really well with this concern that I'm having about the new state, or it feels like a new state of my body? I don't know if that makes sense.
No, it does. No, it's really good. And I love what you said about your son. And I just, this is totally an aside, but I have a pelvic, a female pelvic model with all the muscles and everything. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I just love like my son's nose, and like we pull it out and we talk about it. And we see the uterus and we see the fallopian tubes and we process it. And I'm just laughing because I'm like, someday they're going to be so weird compared to their other friends. Like they're just going to know this stuff.
And so empathetic and so.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, yeah. Maybe weird compared to mainstream.
Exactly. But it's like a good weird where I'm like, because I talk to him about, you know, periods, and I, you know, we're really open and we process it. And I have four boys. So I just love them. Like I don't have females in my life to educate, but it's just, I think, as important to educate the males on like, women aren't weird. Women aren't gross. Like periods aren't disgusting. Like this is just part of life. And so, yeah, they pull out the model and we talk about it. It's just funny. Okay. So getting back on track. when we're talking about addressing specific issues, when your clients come to you and they want to know, I mean, usually the biggest question is, you know, is prolapse reversible? Like how do you approach that conversation when that question comes up?
I think that my first line of questioning is basically like, what people often come to me and say, like, can I treat my prolapse? And I think that we have to unpack that question a little bit more, which is, what are you looking for? What do you think you're asking about? And so reversing prolapse, like that question makes me want to ask one more deeper, which is what would that provide you in terms of an ability to move or do what you're trying to do and can't, or don't want to, or feel like you can't safely do. But also, what are your expectations about visually? What changes are you looking to ask me? Whether your anatomy will look like you did not have this change happen if we do this physical therapy together. So my answer is generally to people that we cannot with any reliability predict the course of what prolapse does. And for some people, it does regress in terms of decreasing grade, and other people, it stays the same, and other people, it worsens. And then symptoms versus anatomical presentation are two different things in the way that they can change or adapt or be influenced. And so I think I tend to say that the word reversible is not an appropriate one in this sense, but I also want to dig deeper with people when they ask me that and figure out what their actual motivation is or like what the real question is. And then we can unpack that a little bit more.
So often the question, like Anne-Marie is saying, you know, when we dig a little bit deeper, we'll often find that people want to go back to a time where they didn't have this fear about their body, or they didn't feel like they kind of now knew this other world even existed, that they didn't have to think that this was a possibility because so many people did not know of POP. And so we can start having conversations about what it would mean to live with POP with less fear and be able to move forward in a direction that is going to feel really fulfilling for them. And really taking the time to kind of focus in, like Anne-Marie is saying, on what that is and what that looks like tends to be a much more productive endeavor. It's really tempting sometimes to just kind of go into the like, you know, well, let's look at the research. Let's look at, you know, here's why the answer is no, or here's why the answer is, you know, maybe depending on what your definition is or whatever. It's very tempting sometimes to kind of go down that route. But I think we really need to understand why someone is asking that question and what they're trying to get from that answer so that we can really speak to that concern and understand their interests a little bit better to know how we can help someone, if we can help them in the way that they're looking for, and if we can't, how to better refer them to someone who can.
So good. I'm over here silent clapping because it's just clapping is too distracting in the audio. But I love your approach as far as digging down to the root of it, because I think sometimes we don't know exactly what question to ask, especially when we feel like we're in a more vulnerable place, and to help guide people to that root, like, what are you really looking for, and helping them see that. Because I think we can, because this diagnosis and talking about it is more on the newer side. I mean, it's not new, but
right,
it's becoming more, you know, understood. And I feel like we can fixate on certain things. So like with diastasis, we can fixate on the gap. Mm-hmm. Like, I just want to close my gap, rather than, like you said, dialing back and saying, okay, so what does this look mean for you? What are your personal goals? Like, what is success, quote unquote, feeling good in your body? What would that actually mean to you? What would that look like? Let's get specific. And I think we can do the same thing with pelvic organ prolapse of what does that look like for you in your body, in your life? What are your goals? Because we can get so fixated on something and we can actually achieve goals and then miss it.
Right.
Like, I have clients who will be like, but I still have a one finger gap. But I'm like, but look at your life and look at what you've accomplished and look at the strength you built. And when you slow it down, they're like, oh, you're right. Like, mm-hmm. I'm actually taking steps towards my goal. And, you know, the gap is always going to be there because it's not designed to not have any gap at all. But anyway, so I love this. So when we are talking about pelvic organ prolapse, I think the word safe comes up a lot, because of that connection to fear. And I think there's a lot of mindfulness in people with a diagnosis of, is this safe? Is that safe? Can I safely do this? Can I safely do that? And how do you walk that tightrope of coaching your clients, maybe not to be obsessive, but also like you're talking about, of taking ownership and taking of their learning process and of knowing their own body? How do you guys coach your clients in a way that isn't like obsessive and fear-based, but also isn't just like, here's a checklist of what to do, do this, don't do this?
I think people really crave structure to work within in a lot of ways, but ultimately that can be really detrimental and limiting in the longer term. And I understand the desire to just know what you're supposed to do and what you're not supposed to do. But I think that when we are honest about what we understand to have an influence on prolapse and on strength and on health and all of that stuff, we cannot use the word safe with good conscience, because we have no evidence to back up any sort of blanket assertions about what is safe or not. And so we both very consciously choose to not use that word and to use words like appropriate or, you know, things that you can well manage now versus things that you're working towards. And so I think that it's very tempting to want to give a lot of structure. And I think some people in the beginning of this process can work well within that. But I also think that what you get when you take away words like safe or lists of things that are good or bad is that in the long term, you help people cultivate an ability to be curious, an ability to kind of use critical thinking to weigh risks and benefits. You help them kind of push their boundaries a little bit in a way that can really promote growth. And I think that it demands a lot of the provider and it demands a lot of the person. But I think that that is how we see people get to a place where they're really in the long term, happy and healthy and working towards their goals, as opposed to saying, as long as I can function within this box, this is the rest of my life and I will be safe here. But at least, you know, I can count on being safe, even though you can't necessarily. But I would really like to be outside of this box, but I just can't, and I will have to live here forever. And so I do think it's a bigger commitment. And I do think it asks a lot of the people working with those with POP, but I think that is worth the payoff, absolutely, to put in that effort.
That's really good. So you guys have a few online resources that you guys have put together. Can we talk about the first one that is geared towards those with pelvic organ prolapse? Like, how did that come to be? How did you birth that? Where did that come from?
Oh, it came from a cavernous and frightening place called my brain. It is, you know, inhabited by bats and ideas such as this. And I had wanted to create something that would basically do the thing that I needed, which was be a resource that provided a balanced and kind of what I would describe as level-headed, evidence-based perspective on POP that could answer questions that I wasn't finding the answer to, or that I was too afraid to ask, or in some cases embarrassed to ask. And I kind of knew that I wanted it to have more of an online platform. I was already working with people in person and saw how powerful just being able to be present with someone managing a diagnosis of POP could be. And my schedule had kind of filled up to the point where I couldn't comfortably take on more people and still maintain some semblance of sanity. And I've seen the power of, I'm a very, very, very introverted person and really enjoy the internet and know that the power of community through the internet and through like a Facebook group that I run called POP Fitness, that had become so evident to me that there was so much opportunity there. And through this really beautiful friendship with Anne Marie, I knew that I couldn't do it alone and that I didn't want to do it alone. And I needed someone who could be a true partner and could kind of call me on my BS or support this endeavor in this kind of mission of changing this narrative on POP. And she and I would just kind of shoot the shit over a drink every now and then and kind of go on and on and on about how just distraught we were with this the current state of things. And I knew that she was someone who was really going to be able to kind of catapult this initial vision that I had had. And I knew that she had similar feelers out there for how she wanted to interact with people differently. And so it really, in many ways, came from kind of the unfortunate, deep, dark place of my diagnosis, but then also all of the wonderful things that have come as a result of that. So the friendships that I've built, the communities that I've been able to become a part of and even start, and then the like catalyst of a different kind of line of work that I do. So all of these wonderful things have come from this initially very frustrating experience. And so I knew that there wasn't something that I could just kind of hand off to people. People in the Facebook group especially were like, well, where do I go to get more information? I love this group. I love that there are, you know, these responses that I'm getting are make so much sense to me and they're not instilling more fear. And I want more of that. And I was answering so many questions and I was posting so many things and it felt really unsustainable. And so I knew that if we could have a centralized place where people could go and could feel confident that they were getting up-to-date information that was provided through a lens that was really empathetic. And I knew that that could be a really powerful thing. And so we kind of set out on this initial journey to create what we thought was going to be a very small kind of side project. And I think there's definitely a part of me that knew that it would be much bigger, but was afraid to present that. And so I said, would you like to create a handout with me? And Anne-Marie, being a very lovely person and somewhat agreeable at the time, decided that she would take on this infographic. And the infographic became like 7 million infographics in a certain form. And so there we are now. But yeah, it really, it was something that was kind of living and breathing and hoping to kind of come out in some way. And I had done a lot of online education stuff and I had worked with training trainers in person. So I knew there were all of these elements and all of these things that I had to offer in this kind of different way. And so it's just been a really lovely kind of culmination of that whole experience for me, but also for Anne-Marie, who can kind of speak to that, perspective as well.
Yeah. I think Haley timed her request perfectly in a time when I had a little bit of like weird manic energy floating around that hadn't found a place to roost yet. So I was ready to go explore her cavernous brain at that moment. And now I'm just along for the ride. But I think that for me initially, I thought that what I was trying to do was fill a need for my patients to have more of me. I think I was still naive to the point of how little I understood about POP at that moment. And I was like, how do I make it more accessible for people to have my information? And I very quickly was disillusioned of that as I started to do more research and to do a much deeper dive into the perspectives of the communities of people with POP that had sprung up to support what I think physical therapists are not well supporting at this moment. And so for me, it became this like professional journey as well in a way that allowed me to, I think, better empathize with what was happening on the level of what my clients were experiencing. And to be better as a clinician, both with information and with empathy and the ability to talk to people. But for me, like the growth of the like person facing, like the person with POP facing product to now having the professional facing product, which I guess is jumping the gun a little bit to probably your next question. But I think the first version was extremely cathartic for Haley in a lot of ways and very educational for me. And I feel like I have been really emotionally satisfied in a lot of ways by doing the professional course because I want to take people along on the journey that I have gone through as a clinician too. And that felt to me like this like very visceral need to try to make my profession better and to keep asking myself to be better. And so I think the whole thing for us has been a very emotional and very like visceral journey and a lot of work.
So much work.
So much work. I'm sorry. And we both work full time. Like this is not something that we have the luxury of sitting around and like doing during business hours.
2020.
It's in the plan. We're manifesting it. But it's something that we like, you know, sit in the dark on our laptops doing because we feel so strongly about it. And I think that as we learn more, like we're already going back and redoing the first course because we have come so far in the last year in a way that we never would have anticipated. So we also appreciate people going on this journey with us and learning with us and letting us revise things that we've said in the past and build on things that we've said in the past to be better resources for them too.
That's awesome. Yes. And I do want to get into your more professional, the second program that you have. But just to summarize, could you just encapsulate what the first program is and who it's for? Like your little, you know, couple sentence blurb.
Yeah, the first program, so Pop-Up and Uplifting Guide, which includes, depending on the option one chooses, some extensive exercise program as well. So either 12 or 24 plus weeks, is for the person who is managing POP. And that might be someone who is newly diagnosed, someone who has been managing POP for years. Maybe their POP, it has kind of stayed its course, or maybe it's changing. So really anyone who is navigating the many aspects of that diagnosis. And so we cover things as basic as anatomy, pelvic floor function, the different treatment modalities that are available to someone. And then we dive deeper into exercise science and how adaptation occurs in the body. That part was super important for me because I realized that the general kind of physical education that the average person receives is zero and or from Self magazine. And so, or Shape or whatever, some magazine that, you know, is available on some shelf somewhere, but doesn't necessarily kind of give someone a broad scope. So exercise information, and then things like managing relationships. There are a lot of questions on Facebook groups and in different support channels that I was seeing for people with how to talk to their significant other or people that they were interested in dating or how to talk to their children or their doctor. And then talking about things like sex and body image. So really taking a whole person view of pelvic organ prolapse and one's relationship to it and creating a guide that can help someone kind of shepherd them through this process and affirm things, question things, and fill in the gaps, the very large gaps of our generalized education.
Fabulous. That's perfect. So I'm going to have a link to that and everything we're talking about in the show notes for all the listeners who are, their ears are perking. What? That's a good, oh, I'm saying that all wrong. Yeah, they're peeking. That doesn't make sense. You know, when you like say something and then it just sounds wrong, even though it might be right. Anyway. So this is a fabulous resource for anyone who is working with someone who is wanting to do something about their pelvic organ prolapse diagnosis. So I'm assuming that this then led into your second course or program.
Yeah, we realized, and we kind of knew this from the get-go, that a lot of people that would be accessing Pop-Up were actually professionals or maybe were people with POP who also were working with people with POP. And so we initially kind of tried to fill in some of that information in the first course and realized through having more conversations and just working in our own kind of spheres that we needed to have a resource that was solely dedicated to the practitioner or the professional working with someone with POP. And so that became what we, you know, famous last words, we thought, well, it's, you know, it's mostly done. It's really just going to be kind of revising it to some extent. It took about a year and it actually was almost entirely completely rewritten. It was funny when we were writing it and we changed a lot of the formatting, but when we were writing it, it was strange to me when there was a section that was very similar. It almost felt like I was like making a mistake just because so much of it had changed. And a lot of that had changed just from our year in kind of working with people with POP in this different kind of perspective and in our group and seeing the holes that we didn't realize that we had. And then in person, like again, I had so many people that wanted to work with someone in person and so few people that I felt fully confident and did not have any reservations about sending them to. And I don't have that network. And part of that is that I might have really high, sometimes unrealistic expectations. But part of that is that that level of education just does not exist in the way that we thought that it needed to. And so it became a kind of an obligation that we had to fulfill that need because it is so great. And ultimately, we can change the conversation about POP at the people with POP level. But for it to fundamentally change, it has to stop. It has to start top down. And we really need to be addressing it from a practitioner perspective for massive, global, widespread, radical change to occur. To really disrupt the POP space, we need to address the professionals that are working with people with POP. And we saw in our group that people with POP were becoming more knowledgeable about POP than their providers. Mm. And we needed to change, we needed to fix that. Because while I think it's so important for people to be educated on their own bodies, and people can absolutely be the first and foremost expert on that, I want the practitioner to match that at the bare minimum. And so we knew that this had to exist. It needed to be bigger, beefier, better researched, in a different format. It needed to be all of the things that we eventually got so excited about that we just kept going.
Yeah, I mean, we ended up writing a 400-page book and making it an audiobook as well. Like, also, like, we do feel like there are so many potential areas where people working with those with POP need to be asked to up their game a little bit or change their perspective in a way that helps. But when we were trying to talk to the people with POP, we were discovering that we were butting heads with the words and the narratives that they were still encountering in the rest of the world. And you can only, a Facebook group can only do so much to try to counteract that weight. And if there's one optimistic voice and then 10 people in their life otherwise telling them about their limits and the things that they can't do and that they should just give up on their exercise goals, then it gets to be really hard. And so how do we ultimately make it easier for people to assume those values and to pursue those goals? It's really to change the wording of what they're hearing from other professionals too. And so I think that having the ability to say, hey, as professionals, we can do better. We should be doing better. It is our professional responsibility to do better and to continually grow. I mean, we don't expect this course to be the same.
Oh, it's already different.
We purposefully put it on a platform where we can go in and change anything at any time to update it with what we need to. And so this is not a stat. We didn't publish it in hard copy for this reason. Like, we don't want there to be a first edition that stays around for 8 years, because I don't expect to be thinking the same way, even in a year from now. And we do want to go back and revise things. So, the pro course is big and it asks a lot of people. And I think it's really challenging to people. And it was challenging to us when we were writing it and coming up with research that contradicted a lot of the beliefs that we still had. And so it's not meant to be an easy breezy, you know, here's a cookbook for how to work with people with POP. It's really meant to say, like, you know, are you meeting these basic levels of understanding about how to work with people going through a difficult time? And even if this wasn't part of your professional education originally, how can we make you better at dealing with these aspects of working with humans? And I think, you know, for me, it felt like this like frantic need to share this that still took us a year at a frantic pace. But it's big and it's more expensive than the first course, but we think it's well worth it. And we want to try to make it a priority for people.
Yeah. And going back to the idea of safe and fear, in my experience working, I did trainer education for a while. And when someone, a new trainer would come in and they had kind of learned the basics of working with a perinatal population, as soon as we got to POP, the vibe changed and the facial expressions changed and the color in their face changed. And it was suddenly a different conversation away from this kind of ultimately empowering message. And that, you know, I saw fear not only in the clients that I was working with, but in people who were working with people with POP. And I knew that if that fear was persisting, that was going to translate very quickly to their clients. And so it was very interesting to me and not unexpected at all that that conversation would almost always gravitate towards this very hesitant and, you know, how do I keep someone safe? And I'm afraid that I'm going to, you know, hurt someone, and all of these things that they weren't really saying about working with people with stress incontinence, or diastasis, or even, you know, pelvic pain. It was really this fear of working with people with prolapse. And again, you know, we have to start from the top and addressing that kind of fundamental systemic concern before we can make real demonstrable change on a global macro level.
Yes. And I do think fear a lot of times does just in any area of our life come from a lack of understanding.
Totally.
A lack of just that education. And if we could just understand and be educated on a subject, then there's a lot less fear. So what kind of professionals join your guys' professional course?
So we have a very robust population of physical therapists, exercise professionals, occupational therapists, a few birth workers, yoga instructors, CrossFit coaches. So we're really hoping that we can have a broader audience. We love, you know, through our respective careers, we have obviously a lot of passion about working with physical therapists and exercise professionals. But, you know, also through that experience, we are also very passionate about working with people who are not in those lines of work because we all coordinate with this population together. And we can't just be the, you know, the kind of PTs and exercise people in the corner kind of saying this one thing while they're OB-GYN or their doula are saying something else, for example. And so we are really hoping that that message can spread well beyond the kind of movement focused crowd, although that is really what, you know, the meat and potatoes of it is. But yeah, we've got a lot of people from a lot of different backgrounds and hoping to kind of continue that diversification as we go forward.
Awesome. So do you guys have one or two, like, just, and if it comes to the top of your head, if it does, great. If it doesn't, but I'm sure you guys do have a couple of like testimonials, like just a couple stories that really impacted you guys as far as you've been putting all this effort and creating this and wanting to, you know, make an impact. And I know you get stories back. Does anything come to your head when I ask you that?
I think that I take a lot of heart in the many like victories that people share with us, and they can be perceived victories, right? Like maybe they're not like giant things on an absolute scale, but people post a video of themselves doing the first fill in the blank pull up or, you know, lat pull or whatever they have been working towards or have been scared of and want to share it with us. And with their community to like get some snaps and some you go girls and like the, yes, let me affirm the work that went into this, whether it was mental or physical or both. And so, I mean, I think we have almost weekly or daily people sharing stuff like that. And that is very, encouraging and motivating to me just because it's like, you know, their caption might say, hey, you know, this was really hard and it was actually a tough week and I didn't feel fabulous, but I did this thing and like, I'm really, really proud of myself. And I can really identify with that and how powerful that is. And I personally am really motivated by that. And then from a provider standpoint, I think seeing, you know, having providers tell us that they were really challenged by the course or that we made them think in a way that they hadn't thought before, is not a like huge testimonial, but it's basically if I provoke anybody to critically think about anything that they hadn't before, like that to me is really, a pat on the back for the work that we did.
Yeah. We have been, I would say really, really lucky in how, or I've been, I don't know if humbled is the word, but it's been really astounding to me to see how many people have been so forthcoming with sharing how much the course or the group or the other group has, or even our social media has impacted them. I would say every day, at least an average of one a day, we're getting messages from people that maybe aren't in our group yet or are just kind of finding us on Instagram, or it can be really anywhere, or someone who's kind of gone through all of our courses, but sharing how just something changed for them, or something affirmed them, or they felt like they weren't alone anymore. You know, I tend to keep a pretty small network of people, and now my network has kind of grown to like 5,000 people over the world, which is like very, very, like astounding and overwhelming to me in like a really beautiful way. But I would say that that community has been so kind to share those reflections with us so frequently that, I mean, I try to screenshot them and save them, because I do think of a time when maybe 20, 30, 40 years from now, I can look back on this kind of sense of legacy that we've created and feel really proud of it. One of the things that was really important for me when I switched over from working as an employee to running my own business was that I knew that I was spending all of these hours doing all of this work that I was really passionate about, but I was doing it for someone else, which can be a really fulfilling and beautiful experience, but it wasn't doing that for me. And there was a very distinct moment where my son had said that, you know, well, mommy doesn't read books anymore with us because she's working. Mm-hmm. And it like really wounded me. And I knew that I needed to change some things around. And while I didn't necessarily work less, I worked in a way that I could be really proud of. And seeing all of the people that it has impacted has made me really excited to have that time when my son is older and I can tell him that, you know, the work that I was doing and the work that I hopefully will continue to do had a bigger impact than just that like local level that I was initially working with. And that's been a really special, you know, that's part of why I get up at stupid times of the day and stay up until too late and choose this over things that, you know, maybe would be like more fun sometimes. Because I have to, and not because someone is like hoping that I will, but because it is this fundamental drive to create this resource, and largely because of knowing the impact that it has already had, and knowing that the more we can create and the broader we can build this network, those messages and that, not just the message, but the fact that those things are changing for people can continue to occur at such a large level.
Well, people are getting their lives back, really. And it's so powerful when you look someone in the eyes, because you just, if you don't know that person and you see it on paper, like, oh, someone did a pull up, like, okay, no big deal. But if you know that person and you know their journey and you know their struggle, and then you see like that is a huge breakthrough. Like I had a client the other day, like she just pulled me aside. She's like, I was able to get in a kayak. I was able to get in and out, and I was able to go kayaking with a friend. And it just was the most amazing thing ever, because I never thought I'd be able to do that again. And then I was able to. Yeah. Through some of the work we'd done together and the work she had put in. Totally. And I just remember like tearing up in that moment of like, I'm so proud of you. Like you have changed your life. And yeah, on paper, like, okay, some woman went kayaking, like, but for her, like yeah. It was a huge success for her. And like, it was a pivotal moment. Like she was like, I could do this. So that's amazing. I'm just so thrilled to watch you guys make this impact and change so many lives and just bring so much hope into a space that has so much fear in it. So for our listeners, I'll have all your information on our show notes, but just where can they find you? Where can they get in touch with you?
Yeah, so we're at www.popuplifting.com. We are also at Pop Uplift on Instagram and Facebook. And all of our courses and resources are available through those channels. Yeah,
that's about it.
That's about it so far.
That's fabulous. Well, if anyone's interest was piqued, I really encourage you, go check them out. Even just following their Instagram, you're going to be really encouraged and get a lot of positive feedback. So guys, thank you so much for your time today.
Absolutely. Thanks for having us.
Wasn't that such a great conversation? I know sometimes nuance can be challenging, but I love how gracefully these two approach serving this community without dogma or a harsh black and white approach and without promising healing, but offering so much hope through intentional communication and by just being straight smart. So if you'd like to find out more about their programs, be sure to check out their website and all their socials. I love following them on social media. I'm always just getting so encouraged and actually some really powerful information as well. So to go along with today's episode, I've created a Pelvic Floor 101 guide just for you. This guide has practical reminders and shifts anyone can take to help strengthen and improve the function of your pelvic floor today. And as always, you can find all the details under the show notes from today's episode at thrivingbirthworker.com under podcast episode 6. So tune in next week to hear a special episode where I'm going to be sharing really super vulnerably around my own experience with diastasis recti and pelvic organ prolapse. And to make sure you don't miss out, you can go hit the subscribe button today and it'll download automatically for you. So thank you so much for joining me today. I'm so grateful for your time and this ability to connect. If you've enjoyed these shows or have any questions or thoughts, please reach out to me via email or social media at Thriving Birth Worker on Instagram and Facebook. And additionally, one of the most exciting gifts you can give me is by rating and reviewing the show if you're enjoying it. This helps us podcasters so very much. And while it takes just a quick second for you, it deeply warms my heart. I hope you all have a fabulous week, and I look forward to connecting with you next week. The information and discussion provided on this podcast are not intended and should not be construed as medical advice. If you have a medical concern, you should consult with an appropriately licensed physician or healthcare provider.